Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And you know, it's probably been a couple of years, maybe a year and a half, since I put out an episode on hiring an executive assistant, an EA, and talked all through the process, how I found one, my first misstep, how I rehired, and the impact it was having on my life and my business and my delegation, which was meaningful. Wanted to fast forward to today to give a little bit of a follow-up on that and a debrief. Big spoiler, do not have an EA anymore. And want to talk about what went really well, what didn't go well, why I haven't hired an EA back since then, and really just give you, kind of just share what happened. And this is, you know, disclaimer at the top, this is not a type of episode where I'm coming down like Moses from the mountain with the Ten Commandments about what works perfectly. I'm still trying to work some of this stuff out. And so it's a little messy episode, I think, but hopefully the rawness of it can be helpful in terms of what worked, what didn't, and how I'm thinking about a few things in case that's a situation you find yourself or you're thinking about this. So hope you enjoy. One thing before we get going, the hardest part of running an e-com business isn't working hard. It's knowing where the work actually moves the needle. And that's why we built the benchmarking guide for e-com owners. Every year we survey 300 store owners inside the Ecom Fuel private community. It's our community for seven and eight figure owners representing over $3.5 billion in revenue. And we built a benchmarking table, which breaks their numbers down by revenue cohort. So you can see exactly where you're outperforming and where you're leaving money on the table compared to businesses your exact size. It comes with our full annual trends report, and it's free at ecommercefuel.com/blueprint. All right, let's get into it. Just want to say before diving into this, that I, even though long-term from a fit from both sides perspective, it did not work out, I was so thankful to get to work with my assistant for the, close to two years that we did. She enabled a part of a season of our life that would not have been possible without her. Always showed up with an amazing attitude. It was a lot of fun to work with and just always put a ton of effort in. So anyway, I just, for getting into this, I'm recording this because I think it will be a lot of people, this is something I think a lot of people want to do and think through doing. And I think it's a helpful reflection for a lot of people considering it, which is why I'm putting the content out there. But just want to caveat this by saying, yeah, was super thankful for the time we did get to work together. And for that season, added a ton to my life and super appreciative for it. All right, a little quick context in case you missed that last episode. How dare you? I, 18 months ago-ish, hired an EA for a season where I was going to be traveling a lot with the family. And she did a ton of work during that season in terms of helping with travel and managing inbox and being kind of my eyes and ears when I was out of touch. And it worked really well. And we parted very amicably, and maybe it was even 2.5 years ago. I'm trying to remember the timing here, but we parted very amicably about 4 or 5 months ago. And today I'm kind of in no man's land. I don't have a full-time EA. I have someone on my team who is helping with certain things, but she hasn't fully been integrated the way my old EA was. I have AI that's taking certain chunks of what I've been doing or what my EA used to do. There's some things that are slipping through the cracks, and that's kind of where I am. So that's, the just kind of full confessional right out of the gates. Here's what worked well. So having someone that could cover for me while I was traveling a lot for a season was really clutch. Someone who could watch things, who could conference me in on the phone call, who could feel stuff while I was out of touch for long periods of time. That was really helpful for that season of my life. Huge, huge win. Setting up systems and documentation, there were a lot of things I'd been carrying in my head for years that I had never got out, never systematized. And some things I didn't even know how I made the decisions. I was just very ad hoc about it. And having someone else I had to delegate that to really helped me think through my priorities and frameworks for that. So that was really helpful. Finding someone who was easy to work with on a rapport level was really nice. I remember the first person that I worked with in that role, the EA role, did not fit the bill. It was painful connecting. And having someone that it's easy to talk with, it's easy to debrief with, that has a good sense of humor, makes that a much better working relationship. So for that period, having an EA for those 12-ish months was a really great move. A couple of thoughts on the screening side of things. I ran a pretty exhaustive hiring process, did some DISC personality testing, a work project, did a whole podcast. You can refer back to that if you'd like. And one thing I think is interesting on the personality testing is personality testing is helpful. I think it can help you kind of categorize and rank different candidates and see where they fall. And I have some friends, I think, who would probably fight me over this. They would disagree very, very adamantly. I think personality testing is the way to think through it is like it gets you directionally in the right direction, but it's not, it is a signal, not the signal. It, as we'll talk about here in a minute, did not predict kind of long-term motivational issues, long-term fit, and whether kind of the hyper attention to detail would hold up to my, to, you know, kind of my levels I was hoping for and expecting. So useful tool, not a crystal ball. Okay, so what you're here for, what broke down, what did not work well? So once I stopped being on the road so much, the role got a little less critical and the fit got a bit softer. That was one thing. I just didn't need as much, I didn't need someone on standby all the time. So that was one of the things. So just a different season of my life and my business. There was some motivation drift as well. I think, you know, if you've ever seen the show Suits, Donna is the secretary for Harvey Specter. He's kind of one of the main protagonists. And I think what we're all looking for when we're looking for an EA is someone like Donna. Donna is like this brilliant but content unicorn. Like she just is super ambitious, super detail oriented, doesn't take any crap. She's like the perfect person you want in your corner. And from an EA perspective, you want that. But you also, it's hard to find someone who is that ambitious, that driven, that amazing, that also is comfortable staying in that role for the long term. We're all looking for our Donna from Suits. And I don't know if Donna exists unless you pay her like $300,000. The brilliant but content unicorn. Scott Galloway, or Prophet G, as many people know him by, exponentially smarter than me. I remember him saying once that he's gone through like 3 executive assistants and has never cracked the code on this, on how to get this to work. Which at the time I heard him say that, I was like, oh, well, I have an assistant that worked out perfectly. And now it just makes me feel a little less like a failure. going from being totally superior to just coming crashing down to earth. And so that was something else, I think, for my assistant. That was part of what broke down over time, was she just got bored doing the things that she was doing. And I think she wanted to have a different role with more responsibility. I just didn't think that was the best fit for a couple different reasons. So that was a challenge. And I sensed that down the road as we kind of, you know, got further and further down the route of working together. Another thing that was tough is this 90% trap, where things were done right probably 90% of the time, which is kind of the worst possible place to be, right? Like if something's done right 50% of the time, you can just say, hey, this is not working out, we'll find someone else. If something's done 98% of the time perfectly or to what you need it to be, you know, that 2% you can live with, right? That's not the end of the world. But like that 85, 90% is tough because it's not bad enough to say, hey, you're not doing a good job, but it's not good enough to fully trust and just let go and say, you've got this without having to double check, which I did a lot. And I think part of this too, if I'm honest, is like, I'm a pretty anal dude. I'm very specific. You know, I tend to have high standards. I'm exacting. And so I think some of that 90% threshold problem was with the role being inherently hard. I think some of it was me, and it's hard to know that split. So that was an issue. And then finally, there was, you know, especially as all these other things compounded, it was someone else on the team. And anytime you have another person on your team, it's another person, even if their job is to help make your life easier, you still, as a good leader, have to think about how to motivate them, develop them, give them a, you know, make sure that they're happy, you know, try to think through how their, you know, their working relationship works. They have time off, you know, there's, you know, compensation, all these things. More people is more just management, even if it's someone who's trying to help you. So anyway, those are some of the things that kind of made it not work. And you know, it was really nice wrapping things up. Parted very amicably. Things worked out really well for her. She's in a great position now somewhere else. A couple interesting things my EA reflected back to me that I need to work on. One was to stop repeating myself. I go back and sometimes listen to my old voicemails, and I realize that I have a tendency to say things twice when I'm delegating and giving instructions. I don't think I trust people to get it the first time. And I will even catch myself talking with AI and Claude, repeating instructions twice because I feel like that makes it more likely they won't get missed. And that drives somebody crazy on the other end. So that was interesting. Also, I realized kind of in the debrief we did together, she wanted to be more of the process of things, be more visible, be more front end. And I think I had a little bit of a stigma about the optics of having an EA and the potential hit that might take on rapport or connections, or maybe people feeling like you don't care about them. And so a lot of times I wanted her to work behind the scenes, but that was harder for her. And I think that cost her some of her motivation. I didn't see it at the time. And some things I think too, you know, just looking a little bit back on what broke down, is sometimes it's really hard. There's some things that are very easy to outsource. Booking flights, that's relatively simple. But like right now we're redoing the roof on our house, and it's like Spanish tile roof, and it's old, and there's this funky like stucco underneath it. And there's all these endless decisions about what type of underlayment, and you know, how do you want to, what does, you know, how stuff that you can't really delegate to an EA or really to an AI. And I was finding more and more that the things that I could delegate were fairly straightforward, and maybe AI could now or in the very near future do them. And the stuff that I wanted to delegate, there was too much nuance there and was one-off, and it didn't really help to have an EA. So where have I landed today? I am, like I mentioned earlier, I've got someone who's on our team, longtime person who deeply trust that, and again, I deeply trusted this person too, that was the whole issue was never of trust. She was a phenomenal human, phenomenal person, always had the best intentions, was sad to part ways. I think it was best for both of us, but I have nothing bad to say about this woman. She was phenomenal. But I have someone who's helping on our team with a few elements of what that EA used to do. But I'm hesitant to hire another full-time EA because even in the last 3 or 4 months, a lot of what she used to do can now be done by AI, scheduling, email drafting, inbox summaries. Even 12 months ago, this wasn't true. Even doing things in the browser. I mean, if you ever use Claude Code with the browser plugin, it's not super glamorous and it's not fast at all. I think it will only speed up, but I think that the number of things that we're going to just delegate to AI is only going to increase exponentially in the coming year. So that's one part of why I haven't hired someone else. The other part is that, you know, anytime you bring on someone else, there's just friction. There's a lift to get them up to speed, right? And I'm a little hesitant to do that given that the work I've needed from her is down and AI is filling that gap. But at the same time, there are things falling through the cracks. Like some of my emails are slower to reply on. There's things that are taking longer. Bills are taking longer. There's just a handful of things I'm not, especially like, you know, right now I'm going through and managing like rescheduling of appointments, which is kind of a pain. I need to get AI in that or I've not done the work to, even though I know AI can do a lot of those things, I have not gone and prioritized making that, getting those systems in place. So stuff is falling through the gaps. So again, what is my big takeaway for you here? Again, do not have a perfect prescriptive thing for you. This is more of the honest diaries of Andrew searching the world over for the perfect EA solution and failing. Finding a great EA is hard. You know, like I mentioned, Galloway, having not cracked it after 3 times, I think that's permission or at least a little bit of cloud cover for the rest of us. Having one is super valuable, but I think the math has shifted between AI and having other teammates that maybe can fill in on things. And so, you know, maybe the right framing, if I had to boil it down, is maybe having a person, someone you can trust in judgment and doesn't need to be, you know, as rigid as AI for a season versus a forever role is a really great way to bring them in. But yeah, it's a really hard problem to solve. I'm still trying to figure it out. But the one thing I do know is AI is really starting to fill a lot of these gaps. And I think executive assistants, as valuable as they can be, unless you need them for a real intensive season, are going to start probably being a little less common in the future with all the stuff AI is doing. Anyway, those are my diaries. Don't have it figured out. I'd love to hear what you think. You know, if you've made this work, if you haven't, from updates, drop me a line anytime, andrew@ecommercefuel.com, over on Twitter @udarian, if you can spell it. It's a brutal one. Y-O-U-D-E-R-I-A-N, or over on LinkedIn. Forging what matters. Back in my college days, I went to Montana State in Bozeman, and there was a house a couple blocks away from where I lived that was pretty notorious. I don't know about notorious, but well known for hosting these rather popular, very large parties. And I remember one time, these guys were running the place. So many people showed up to this party, probably 50 people, that the floor broke. I think some of the joists underneath broken. I have memories. I wouldn't frequent them all the time, but would swing in from time to time. The guys who hosted were actually pretty good dudes. They weren't overly bro-y. They were friendly. They were fun. I think Animal House with a soul and a higher IQ. I remember having a couple of beers up on the roof while the craziness was below, contemplating life and watching a sunset. All in all, a little crazy, but some good memories. And fast forward probably 15 years, and I'm at a dentist appointment. It's a new dentist. I haven't met him yet. The hygienist says, hey, he'll be in just a minute. And I'm sitting there laying flat, you know, looking into the light, open my eyes, and this guy's face comes over me, and instant recognition. And my brain is struggling to understand what I'm seeing. It's one of the guys from this house. And my instant reaction was, this guy is not qualified to be drilling inside of my mouth. Almost got up and walked out. And the truth was, after I thought about it for a minute, he was actually probably the most competent and smartest of the four, pretty ambitious guy. But the bigger realization I had once I pulled myself together and composed myself and we figured out who each other were and I didn't run away was that I realized, man, at some point, we all became, my generation, we all became the adults in the room. This is terrifying. And the secondary realization is that the big secret of life that nobody tells you, but you figure out slowly, is that no one really grows up. Everyone is just an old kid walking around in an adult body. And this thing that happens isn't just a thing that happens with your crazy, you know, the crazy guy in college or through house parties that becomes your dentist. No, I mean, in e-com, I have seen this and maybe a little less, hey, wow, is this guy qualified to be working on my, you know, medically on me? And more, holy crap, that brand that I'm seeing at the end cap in Target, or that's being, you know, I just happen to see at a friend's house, or I see on a national television ad, or even a Super Bowl ad, is being built by people that we know in our generation. People that when they started, they had no idea what they were doing. There's a guy named Kyle who is a longtime Ecom Fuel member, and we did a mastermind years ago that kicked off pretty well. He was one of the youngest members in there. And fast forward a few years, and right after the pandemic, he started a paddleball company. Pickleball company. And it's grown into one of the most respected paddle makers in the sport. My brother heard that I actually knew this guy, brother who can kind of be a little hard to impress sometimes. He found out he was in the community and he just kind of fanboyed a little bit. I mentioned it and I mentioned it to Kyle that my brother loved his paddles and he very generously hooked him up with a paddle that made my brother's month. And this was another one of those moments where like we are the builders, at least not me per se, but the community. The e-com community that I have had the privilege to get to grow up with and around and sometimes connect people who are building stuff. Like just a couple more examples. Sam Parr emailing with him about an e-com idea he had in 2013 in my early podcast days. And he's now built Hampton and sold a business to HubSpot. Justine and Adrian from the Woobles. I remember when they came to an e-com fuel event. We're getting off the ground, doing insane numbers, but just the two of them working probably just around the clock. And now they're a nationally known, incredible brand. I was changing my filters the other day for my furnace. And I had the filter I had was from FilterBuy, which is run by David Heacock, who spoke at our second ECF Live before he transformed this Midwestern factory into a national filter company. Sean Frank from Ridge, everyone knows Sean. He was I remember in the early days of ECF when he was a new forum member and chatting about a lot of things before he'd become the wallet king. That's the title I like to give him. Maybe even, I remember one of my top first 20 episodes was Ed Hallen from Klaviyo. And I was interviewing him, and this is a great trajectory and how two stories can divide, in terms of looking at what he's built versus what I've built over the years. Proud of what I've built, but it's, from an economic impact perspective, he's done so exceptionally well and built just a staple in the e-com space. But he's the founder of Klaviyo. And I remember interviewing him when he was, it was him and Andrew, and they were just working and hacking on their code base together, just the two of them. And to build Klaviyo into the public company and the powerhouse that it's become. It's so cool to see the progress people have made over the last, 10 or 15 years. And if you've already built something, keep going. You're a part of this. Thanks for making this world a little bit more awesome. And if you don't feel like you've built anything yet, and I think a lot of us, even no matter how much we do, we don't feel like we ever quite get there. So keep that in mind. It's still very much possible. The door is open. The people building the future aren't magical. They're just kids, people who used to have crazy parties at their college house, who kept showing up to make something great. Before I let you go, we asked 300 store owners to rate their financial knowledge on a scale of 1 to 5. 80% of them rated themselves a 4 or below. And here's the crazy thing. The jump from a 4 to a 5 is where everything changes. Owners who made that leap from a 4 to a 5 had nearly double the financial runway. Not 10% more, double. And by runway, I mean cash in the bank. That last step from pretty good to I really know this stuff is one of the most valuable jumps you can make as an operator. The Financial Mastery series that we built out at Ecom Fuel is built to get you there. It's a free course built for e-com owners, and you can grab it at ecommercefuel.com/mastery. And if you're a 7 or 8 figure owner who wants to be around other owners at this level, thinking about this day in and day out, you'll want to check out our community at ecommercefuel.com. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.